The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Hey, hey, welcome to another edition of Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama, doing a fantastic job. He's been down there several months. Of course, you also know him as the former CEO of the Jimmy Hill Mission. Michael, what is going on, man? It's starting to cool off a little bit. Happy fall to you. How are you?
Yeah, I really appreciate every degree less than what it normally is.
I hear you. It's a great time of the year, and I know we've got holidays right around the corner with Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas, so we got lots to talk about. Of course, this is a show that it's your show. I just kind of threw the idea about doing some talk about non-for-profits because there are 1.5 million non-for-profits in this country, and we also talk about some business. We got some great emails, too. info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. If you have any questions for Michael Coleman, we'll get to all your questions and your answers every single week. The show runs every single Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. So if you miss part of it or just get half of it, listen again tomorrow and the following day at 10 o'clock. And also wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Google that. Wherever you see your favorite podcast, you can get after it. We got a couple emails I want to get into. But first thing, I want to get into something a little larger here. The CVS Health CEO just came out yesterday and said it's time for business leaders to get serious about mental health. When I just say that, and I don't even ask you a question, what do you think?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I have to agree. I've said a lot on here about how important it is to not grind away at your employees. And boy, I tell you, it's when you see your employees struggling, it's foolish to me. That you continue to stay focused on a bottom line when your employees are going through things that's affecting their life. They're obviously have turmoil inside. And I just don't understand how people look at other people and see that they're struggling and still focus on the dollar. And I know those concerns don't go away, but to me, if let's just say I was focused on the dollar, I'm going to get I'm going to get more productivity from an employee who is cared for, cared about, and even if I have to sacrifice time for mental health, that employee is going to pay it back tenfold to me. So I think it's a huge problem, in part because we don't understand it. If people struggle with mental health issues, you know, we have a tendency to look at them as weak. Now, look, I'll be the first to say that in the military, that was kind of our mantra. If you showed any kind of struggle whatsoever, and I was 21 years in the Army, you did. You kind of looked at somebody as being weak. Why can't you adapt? Why can't you overcome? And so, unfortunately, what we trained others and ourselves as well is you don't really talk about those things because real men – don't struggle. And I tell you what was so interesting about that is I was diagnosed, as I've mentioned before, about 2003 with multiple sclerosis. And one of the greatest lessons in that, one of the greatest blessings was I could look in a mirror and I looked fine, but I was dying on the inside. And so I began to say, I wish people could see what's going on, how I actually physically feel, because I was hurting. I had a lot of nerve pain, nerve damage, just struggling in so many ways, just trying to sort it all out. And my life was a mess inside, although I looked no differently on the outside. One of the great blessings that came out of that was it taught me to cut that other mess out and to stop viewing people just from the outside or based on my own experience. And because I felt that what I needed was somebody to sit down with me and allow me to kind of communicate those feelings. And so since then, I've really had a change of perspective. And I'm sorry that it took me getting MS to be able to change my mind. But in many ways, I'm thankful because it has helped me in the nonprofit world to care for people who are struggling with things that are different than I struggle with. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to have greater empathy and care. And it's just prepared me to deal with people who are different and are experiencing different struggles.
Yeah. Mental health has certainly been the collateral damage of the pandemic. And I still think that we got a long ways to go find out exactly just how much it influenced our social isolation, our awareness and increased willingness to openly discuss things like depression, loneliness, and burnout. I think the fact that the U.S. government had opened up this 988 suicide and crisis lifeline, for instance, I think is living proof that, hey, listen, I'm a little, I've heard a lot about this 988 crisis lifeline, and I'm hearing that there's not licensed individuals on the other end. Sometimes it's just a matter of having someone there to answer the phone to talk to you or talk through a certain situation. And that seems like the end all. I know they're wanting to decrease suicides, which, by the way, is the leading cause of life loss in children in this country over the last 3 or 4 years. But at the same time, I really think, talk about the preventative aspects of trying to keep people from being burned out or stressed out. You dealt with a lot of individuals at the Jimmy Hill Mission that obviously had gone past that, but you've also been a CEO of many big companies where you have a lot of individuals that deal with those things on a regular basis. What are some of the signs? What are some of the red flags when you see an employee that looks like they're at the breaking point before it gets to that point where they need to call a 988?
Yeah, so I think... So it's really important that you know anything about that person that begins to change. But the problem is so many CEOs or leaders don't take the time to get to know somebody, so they don't even recognize a change in demeanor. But if you take the time to learn your employees, to get to know them, to make them, to communicate that you genuinely care about them, then lots of times when you see something that's just different. And sometimes, look, we all have those days where you came in, you had a bad evening or you had a bad weekend, and you're just kind of dragging one day. You know, if I see something, I'm like, hey, everything okay? And you kind of, oh, yeah, I just had a bad, you know, it's a quick explanation, no big deal. But lots of times that puts me on alert that I continue to watch to see, yeah, was that just a bad day or is this turning into something? And let me tell you, I have one instance that, there's several that stick out to me regarding this subject, but I have one circumstance to where I thought I was really liberating this person because they had complained that they were not allowed to do the things that they needed to do. And so I came in like, okay, here you go. You have freedom to go do this. And then the freedom ended up overwhelming that person. Mm. And they came into my office, closed the door, and just broke down. But I told them, they were apologizing. And I said, listen, you did the right thing. I want you to come in here. I said, of course, just being a man in me, I want to fix things, and you can't fix things like that. But what I want that person to know is, my heart's in the right place, but depending on who you're dealing with, some people would jump all over it and say, oh man, thank you for giving me this. And other people are overwhelmed by the freedom there, and they operate better with some rules and structure. And so just because everybody's different, everybody has different triggers, everybody has different traumas. Sometimes it's situational, sometimes it's just so complex. How people are affected day to day, and how people see things, and so all you can do, or all I can do, is just communicate that I care. And how I validate that, I try to. I could point to numerous failures on my part. I don't want to come across as having it all figured out, but I'm getting to be an old man at 56.
Yeah, so easy. I'm 56
I feel like
too
an old
now.
Man.
Yeah.
An old man at 56, and I've just learned, there's been lots of times where I've seen employees break down, and even though I need them to do the work, I'm like, hey, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a couple of days, and I just want you to go. I don't even charge them for that vacation time or sick time. I say, look, you're overwhelmed. I want to help you, so you're free to talk to me, but I just want you to get away. If this is what's causing you, I just need you to go rest. And I will tell you, you create such loyalty because that person goes home. And I cannot begin to tell you the number of texts I've gotten that said, Oh, it's just what I need. Thank you. I feel so much better.
That's great.
But then you got an employee who comes back and goes, wait a minute, I'm working for a company where my boss, he authentically cares about me. So I'm going to care about him. I'm going to make sure that his back is covered. I'm going to make sure that the organization is covered. So you get a more motivated employee. And that, of course, that's not 100% all the time, but it's the rule, I would say, rather than the exception.
Absolutely.
And so that feeds into a lot of the things we've talked about the quiet quitting.
Mm-hmm.
You pay somebody minimum wage, you pay somebody low wage. Well, you tend to get what you're paying for. But if you pour into people, it's not always about the money. And some of that is just recognizing that something's off today. And there have been times where I'm just like, my desk is covered up. But hey, Jim, hey, Marissa, whatever their names, come on in and just tell me how things are going with you.
Yeah.
And I wish that there were many times that I would have had that person in my life. So I've just tried to determine to be that for other people.
Right here. He's Michael Coleman. Of course, he's the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. There are over 35 counties in the great state of Alabama, formerly the Jimmy Hale Mission. This is called Mission Minded. We keep our mind on our mission, and our mission on our mind, talking about non-for-profits, talking about mental health. We talk it all when it comes down to great business and business practice. Make your business even better. And I'll give this last little stat here. We'll get into our emails here at info@tonycurryradio.net. Before the pandemic, CVS Health reported 20,000 virtual mental health visits. In the last 2 years, they've had 20 million. I mean, that is from 20,000 to 20 million just in the last 2 years. So that should tell you something about your workforce. It's pretty amazing stuff.
I will tell you. So a lot of people will just say, that's a result of COVID. And I think COVID, like you said, I don't think we have any idea the effect of it. But part of that is we are creating we're normalizing mental health concerns. And so it's not something that has to be hidden. We talk about it more openly. As we learn, we're getting more accepting. And I think, again, for leaders in an organization to just talk about it and just to let people know, hey, you're not odd, you're not a freak, you're not, because there is not a person in this world who doesn't deal with mental health. Now, of course, mental health is, to me, I don't know if this is the clinical distinction, but mental illness, where you have schizophrenia or you maybe bipolar or you have deep depression, is vastly different than people who just struggle with things, or you have trauma triggered from your childhood,
mm-hmm.
and there's all sorts of those things. And all that, depending on how situations are, money may be tight one month, then you run into something that reminds you of bad. I mean, it can all just pile up on you. And the problem is when people don't have proper foundations, they can end their life just that quick. Yep. And I'll tell you one story that I heard that's just, it kind of gives you an example. There was a young boy who was involved in a sexting, Now, I didn't have cell phones when I was a teen,
yeah.
But we were no different growing up. We just didn't have that capability then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the peer pressure was so great that was going to come out, and he took his own life. And he was otherwise, from all reports, well-liked, healthy, mentally healthy.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can have a mental health crisis that just runs away with you so quickly, and you can hit despair, and people act on that before you know it. So mental health issues should be taken very seriously, even though it may just be a situational depression or seemingly one-time things. Always pay attention to the people around you and communicate that you care and that you're always available. Try to always be available for those who are struggling with issues, because you just don't know how serious it is in anybody's life.
And it's unfortunate, but then again, it's a silver lining in the fact that maybe it took more of us to be stressed out, burned out, depressed, clinically, whatever, for us to finally start understanding that it's a widespread problem. And you know, the more people that are certainly enduring those types of stresses, and if we have Dr. Josh here, and I think it's interesting, just a little heads up, he always gives me the 2-week notice. He always says, listen, if you're not feeling right for about a 2-week purpose, it may be worthy of reaching out to somebody, whether it's a psychologist, psychiatrist, or someone in the medical field, from a mental standpoint, say, listen, something's just not right. Maybe you're not eating right. Maybe you're just hopeless for a couple of weeks, but that 2-week area is certainly something you want to take a look at. Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman. He, of course, the Montgomery Food Bank. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. This is a great question here. Jan in Forest Park. This kind of depresses me because it's about social media. She said, Michael, how has social media affected non-for-profits? Do people really follow non-for-profits on social media platforms? And if they do, how do you keep your content fresh so they continue to follow you? I mean, if you have an event and you tell people, hey, go to, I don't even know what your social media platform is for the Montgomery Food Bank, even if you have it, you say, go there and sign up. But then if you want to keep them on every single day or have them follow you throughout the years, how in fact do you do that?
Well, I'm telling you, she asked how important it is. It's incredibly important. Even though I would tell you, I think Facebook to some degree, you're starting to see, is they kind of call that the old people's social media now.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Old people being my age, more young people on Instagram. But the bottom line is, like right now, we serve, even though we serve 35 counties, we have 12 counties that come to us directly. And one of the things I've noticed is the struggle of those 12 counties to even know that we are on Facebook. I mean, I got my thoughts crossed there for a second. That those 12 counties know that we're their food bank.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we serve a lot of rural counties. And so if you were to go around person to person and community to community, it's very difficult. So you do targeted ads and things like that, or boost an ad into a whole community. You get friends and family and people who are connected, employees, to invite people to the page. But ultimately, they can like the page. But if you want to grow people there, you've got to have two elements. One is you've got to have a strategy to where you're using social media. You're not dependent on social media to do any one thing, but it's part of a coordinated effort with the other things that you're doing. It certainly has a place in your communication plan. But secondly, you have to be able to understand who your audience is and understand what message you're trying to convey. It can't be all of one thing. Even the impactful stories, the emotional stories that tug at your heartstring, you can't just do that every single day. It has to be a mixture of, well, some people are need help. So sometimes I just want to give information. Some people may be looking to get involved and volunteer. So, you know, I'll put that out. Sometimes they need to understand your impact and what you're doing. And so that story needs to be told. And then sometimes it may be a call to action of, hey, we're aware of something here at the food bank or your nonprofit, and we really need you to rally around us. So it needs to be a good understanding of who your audience is and what you're trying to accomplish through your messaging. But don't just rely strictly on Facebook. Like, don't just throw it out there to Facebook because there's so many variables. One of the things I've learned is when you start mining your Facebook data, if you just throw it out there and then you say, okay, well, I'm hoping it gets enough likes or enough interaction. Mm-hmm. Well, lots of times, depending on what it is, or you go and you recognize, well, it only got this much exposure and there's these factors. I mean, the algorithms are incredibly complex, and I don't even begin to pretend to know what the algorithms are. But I do know that those are factors. So sometimes I may put out an impactful story by video, but it doesn't get much play. Well, I look and go, oh, well, it really didn't move people, when it really was a structural issue within Facebook.
Yep.
And so that's sometimes why it's good, even though it's an investment of dollars, to bring people in who are experts in that field, because they know how to navigate that and get your message out as intended.
Well, and it makes sense, because if you are on Facebook, and we've done the same thing with Tony Curry Radio, if you're on there and you're like, okay, where's my $5 or $10 going? And you see the ramifications or the impressions that you're gaining by that. Obviously, you know what they're doing. The funny thing is that's how Facebook makes their living. They get your information, your algorithms based on how your post works, and they use those to help themselves. So if you're spending money with Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or TikTok, I can promise you they're using your information as well. But that is, and it does, I hate to tell you, I'll put some stuff out. I think this is going to kill and it'll get nothing. And then I'll put something out, and maybe it's the time of the day it's being put out. Yeah, it depends on what the hashtags are, the ads. It'll make your head.
I'll tell you something else I learned too was you can, let's say you even go behind the scenes, you peel back a layer of Facebook and you get into some of the data. And what I discovered was, so we would put out some advertisements and it would say, okay, you are paying, you paid for this ad. They take what you paid by the number of clicks of people clicking on that ad. And let's say it worked out to where it says, okay, you paid 50 cents per click.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the data. And then I'm like, okay, is that good or bad? Don't have a clue. So it's not just that you get data, but you got to know how to interpret the data. So I had a guy who was looking at it that goes, well, for this particular ad, the average is 75 cents a click. So you were only paying 50 cents a click. So we were getting our money's worth, but it could have been reversed. I could have been paying 75 cents a click and thinking I'm killing it. And he comes back and goes, well, the average for these kind of ads are 25 cents a click. So I'm paying three times as much as I should be.
That's right.
And so sometimes you just can't cheat. You can't skimp around, when it comes to dollars and things like that, because we were trying to squeeze more juice out of our Facebook. So even though we were paying somebody to give us that, we were able to adjust our Facebook and it was much more effective.
Well, and I think we're kind of used to seeing someone post something that's got 15 followers and it goes viral and next thing you know, they're millionaires in it. And that you got a better shot at hitting the Georgia State Lottery than having that happen sometimes. I don't care what your content is. We're all hoping for that because we think, hey, listen, like you said, you're putting out something that's really, really good. You're putting it out to the group of people you think wants to see it. And you're thinking, this should grow legs on its own. I shouldn't have to spend money for people to see wonderful content. And then we do this with the show. Mission Miners is a prime example of that. I could tell you exactly what's costing for every view and every listen we have here on Tony Curry Radio. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We'll do your emails. And, of course, you can hear the show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. That's Central Time right here all over the world, the United States, right here in Birmingham and Hoover, where we reside with Tony Curry Radio. Download the Tony Curry Radio app, and you're good to go. It takes you 5 seconds. You're going to love it. Lots of classic rock. And, of course, on the Tony Curry Radio podcast platform, that thing is growing every single week. Amy in Hueytown wants to know, what exactly does right to work state mean? And what are Michael's views on non-competes? And do non-competes exist in the non-for-profit business?
Oh, wow. So let me tackle the non-competes. No, non-competes, I will give you the best example that I had just personally. Was a gentleman that I know that was a physical therapist that started a physical therapy company, sold that company out. And so they were told, he was told, you have to sign a 2-year non-compete. And it was for to own a physical therapy company in the state of Alabama. So he moved to Florida for 2 years, formed another business, and then after the 2 years was up, he was able to relocate some of his business back to the area. And the reason they do that is when you buy a business, when you buy somebody out, let's say if I was going to buy out a business and this person was well known in the area, what you don't want them to do is turn and go right across the street and start a similar business and then pull all his clientele over there. So I think it's good business. If you're going to take the risk of taking on a business, you want to certainly, you're buying part of the clientele. When I bought Wisteria Cottage, you know, we had at the time maybe 4,000 Facebook followers and the customer base. Well, that was all included in the purchase price. And so they weren't allowed to go across the street and start another women's boutique and do the same kind of thing. So, but in the nonprofit world, you don't have that because you don't have ownership. You don't have individual ownership. of an entity. One of the things about nonprofit, and I'll say this on occasion just to make sure, some people think nonprofit means you can't have more money at the end of the year than at the beginning of the year.
Sure.
But that's not the case. What a nonprofit means is that no single person owns that entity, that every nonprofit is governed by a board of directors, and it's put together for at least a 501c3 is what I'm referring to there. Like I said, there's 27, I think it is, not 501c4, c5, c6 is all that. But for charities, 501c3, that has to be serving the public good, and that's what makes it a charitable organization. And so when you make money, if you're in the black on your budget, you have more money at the beginning of the year, then I, as the director or the CEO, can't say, oh, I had a good year, I'm going to pocket that extra money. All of that money that comes in belongs to the nonprofit and has to go back into the nonprofit. And that's governed by laws and rules. And we have to report that every year to the government on a 990 form. And so that's the difference as to why you don't have a non-compete, because I could take that same idea. Let's say if it was a food bank, I could go somewhere else and start my own food giveaway program, my own pantry. But and donors could come to me, but there's no such thing as a non-compete that I'm aware of anyway. It really doesn't make sense or fit within the nonprofit realm.
Hit me up again
on what our first question was.
No, the first question is, she wanted to know what exactly is a right to work state.
Yeah, so right to work state, as I understand it, and I always make sure I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
But a right to work state, basically the way that I see it and the way it affects me is you have much less legal protection for workers. It's typically, they think of it as a non-union state. But basically, workers don't have the protections that others do. So in theory, I could fire somebody because I got angry at them or because I got frustrated with them, or really for any reason. Now, I will tell you, some people think that means there's no protections. And let me tell you, that's absolutely not the case. If you are a minority, and that is racial minority or gender or disabled, there's all sorts of laws that protect you. The truth of the matter is, the only person who is not in a protected class is a white male. If you're African American, whether you're male or female, you're a protected class, or any sort of Hispanic, Asian, any ethnicity other than Caucasian, you're technically in a protected class. And the same thing for women, and same thing for those who are disabled. And I will tell you, while it is sometimes abused, I'm not opposed to that. And the reason is because at some points in our country's history, we've had people who were fired because the boss didn't like black people, or the boss didn't like Asian people, or the boss was a misogynist who sexually harassed the secretary. So she quit, and he's just like, well, I fired her because she wouldn't sleep with him. And so I'm not opposed to there being protections to make sure that people are not just summarily dismissed for absolutely no reason.
Does age discrimination play into that as well, or no?
It can.
Yeah.
It can. Now, you know, like I think about the Methodist Church, I think at age 70, it's mandatory, but I'm not aware of businesses that are allowed to write that in their law, like mandatory retirement ages, unless... Yeah. You know, it usually has to be, you have to prove that they can no longer perform a standard. And I'll tell you this, this was really eye-opening to me. I had a guy one time, and he was a driver, and He had eye surgery. He was not a very good driver, and so I thought to myself, well, now he can't drive, and maybe even permanently, but certainly for many, many, many months. And so this is a good time to, you know, maybe give him severance and send him on his way. And I found out I absolutely couldn't do that because the government requires you under the Americans with Disabilities, even though it wasn't a they weren't disabled, like formally disabled, like drawing a disability check. American with Disability Act protected him. And so we had to do what's called a reasonable accommodation. So what that means is you don't have to create another position, but the question is there a job that they can do, or can you make a slight change to their current jobs to accommodate? Is it reasonable? And so that's a very subjective term. But the bottom line is that person ended up sitting at a desk and answering the phones, which even though he was in a driver position,
yeah.
But that was a reasonable accommodation. So he didn't lose his job. And like I said, the frustrations that come is because people choose to abuse that. Like if they're a poor performer and you dismiss them, even if they're documented, and if they happen to be of a different race or they happen to be of a different gender, when they file EEOC complaints over and blaming it on race or gender, because it takes away from those who are legitimately discriminated against. And so, again, always trying to navigate, is it legitimate or is it somebody using it as an excuse to try to overcome poor performance on the job?
Great email questions. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Please send those to us and listen to the show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here, Central Time on TKR. And, of course, wherever you get the Tony Curry Radio podcast, we're available on every major industry. Michael, great stuff. We'll catch up next week. I appreciate you, and take care of yourself.
All right, man. I enjoyed it so much, as always.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.